You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here we are, episode 97 of Fly on the Call. It's been a while since I said the specific number out loud in the intro, and it's almost a surprise to myself. But I'm so happy to be here, have you here, and bring you another great guest. I haven't had a home state Connecticut band on in a bit, and I'm stoked to have Arms Like Roses on the pod today, as they're one of the ones I'm currently most excited for. Their debut EP, Get Some Sleep, is a cool mix of emo and post-hardcore, with toes dipped into plenty of other genres. This was just followed up with their acoustic Past Midnight EP, which is holding listeners over as they're finishing up LP1, which will hone in on the best parts of Get Some Sleep. Today we're talking about how the band came together, with most of the members not knowing each other, and the early discovery of their sound. We also hit on the writing process for the album, how it was affected by the pandemic, and how the band's embracing the return of live shows, striving to bring their music they believe in to as many ears as possible. I know you all sort of like kind of came together without knowing each other, and Tom was kind of like the center of that wheel that ended up connecting you all. Can you talk a little bit about kind of like that initial connection and how the band formed?
Yeah. So basically it all kind of just happened nicely. It was out of the blue. I played a show with Estelle's old band that was called OK. It was just like a punk rock band. Back when I used to be in this like twinkle emo band called Carlos Danger.
Yeah.
And which Zila filled in with us a few times too with that band.
But hell yeah.
I hadn't spoken to Estelle for like we didn't really know each other that well. Like we just played this show together and sort of like kept in touch through the internet, like on and off for a while. And Estelle just kind of randomly messaged me one day and was like, "Hey, I'm moving back to Connecticut and like I don't know anyone who does music. Like, can you help me out? Cause I want to do a band again." And at the time, like I wasn't really too happy with where I was, musically speaking. So I was like, you know, I'll just start a band with you. Like, I'll do it. Like at the time, Nina hadn't really been like doing music in a while. And like, also it was like literally within a few days of each other. And like, we had ran into each other at a show and Nina was like, "We live close to each other. Like, let's just start a band. Why not?" And I was like, you know, perfect. And to round it out, I hit up Zila because we'd been roommates in college and I knew that he was a good guitarist who was reliable.
We basically lived together in college. Three out of the 4 years we went there, we were like sleeping in the same bed.
Nice. I mean, how did that kind of like lack of familiarity with each other kind of like affect the early process of forming the sound, especially like leading up to the name change and the kind of like pivot from, you know, more of like an indie thing to the heavier like emo-y post-hardcore side of things?
I think we picked that name thinking that we were going to go towards like an indie rock kind of sound, like maybe a more a less heavy sound than we have now. And what, this is the direction that we're going, this is how we all work together cohesively, this is the music that we make. Then we were like, okay, we need to change this name because it sounds like someone else, it doesn't
yeah,
sound like
I mean
us.
At the time it kind of felt like that type of like, I don't know, super like twee, like Frankie Cosmos type bands were kind of like all the rage in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And that name, the old name Summer Camp Crush, just sort of like fell in with that. And it made sense at the time, but I don't think any of us like really listened to that type of music that much.
No.
Not really,
so no. Like playing like heavier emo just really felt correct. And we were like, dude, this name makes us sound so goofy. We got to get rid of it. Especially because, like, I don't know, when we first came together, and I've said this in a couple interviews that we've done so far, is like the first day that we practiced together, like we really, like, nobody knew anybody. We were kind of just like, what do we do? And I was like, Zila, do you have any riffs? And then he just pulls out like some Tool, like System of a Down.
Not Tool. And, like, okay, yeah, System, yeah.
Like new metal.
Give me more credit than that. Yeah, just some garbage because I didn't know what the hell to do. I don't know what anyone played. I hadn't even heard of Stampeder or Okay at the time. I only knew of Tom's band and the direction that Tom wanted to go in. And I was like, I don't know this. Oh, I'm peeking, I'm noticing. And he's like, no. And I'm like, all right, how about this? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Like, all right, what about this? And that's the first song off the EP.
Yeah, yeah. The first song, Sleepover, it was kind of just Zila started just playing a thing that was like the intro to that song. And I was like, yep, that's what we're doing. That's
figuring out the band name that we have now was it was a hassle, yes. And we all came with all like lists of names that we kind of were thinking about, and we all presented our lists like painstakingly over veggie burgers on my deck, I remember. And we couldn't settle on one. I remember we kind of settled on Summer Camp Crush, and we were just like, all right, that's fine, whatever. And then when we did it again, I picked up a book. It's translated Sappho's poetry from ancient Greece called If Not Winter. It's a collection. And I flipped to a page and read one of the poems, and Arms Like Roses was in one of the lines. And that's how the name came about.
I like some of Zila's names the best. Not for our band, but just in general.
Yeah, what the hell? Do I have that list still?
It was some of them were really funny, I remember.
Some of them were like quite terrible. Let's see if I have that list on my phone. I don't think these are them, but I just pulled up band names off of one of my notes, and I have Erotic Murder Police, Pumpty Dumpty, Wholesale Stem
Oh, this
Sale,
is it.
Candy Cane Carnage, and Roadside Damage.
Yeah, I remember. I remember Humpty Dumpty. Okay, I'm sorry.
You mentioned that like the riff from Sleepover came from you just kind of like, you know, busting it out. Did the rest of like the formation of the sound kind of come more from like jamming, or like, you know, getting to know each other and your musical tastes more like by discussing music?
Both, I guess, for the EP, because we were just kind of figuring each other out, I guess.
I would say we're very, weirdly enough, anti-jam in this band.
Yeah, now we are.
Not that any of us are opposed to it. It's just never been a faithful process of making songs for our sound.
No, I'd say that I oppose it. I don't enjoy jamming, really. I prefer, like, if somebody has an idea for a song and comes and is like, hey, this is a song. Because for the songs that are on the EP, except this song Waviously, which is also kind of why it doesn't sound like any of our other songs, because it wasn't really written with this band in mind. But the rest of the songs were kind of written by, we used to practice at Crunch House in West Haven, and we used to just like sit there and kind of be like, okay, this sounds like something, can we do something with it? And all of the songs on the EP kind of came together through that painstaking process where we're just like, let's try this one part with this other part, and like sitting there and jamming it out. And it really wasn't like a very effective, or like I'm happy with how the songs came out. It just was not an efficient way to write songs. And now it's like, we all kind of, I think there are songs, all of us on the LP, there are certain songs that all of us except Adam wrote individually. And then
I will say I enjoyed the collaborative process of doing it that way. But I do agree that it was not ideal.
Highly unreliable. Because
yeah.
While it
because
worked,
after that, I remember getting together and trying to do the same thing multiple times. And we were all just like, no, this sucks. This sucks. That sucks. And we just couldn't piece anything together.
And I do think, so like in the process for the LP that we, by the way, like I figure it makes sense to mention, we're finishing up recording it within the next month. With Chris Teddy over at Silver Bullet Studios. And we, like, all of us except for Adam, because he joined the band a bit later on, but the other four of us each wrote different songs individually and brought them to the band for the album. And I think sort of like sharing playlists with each other constantly of like the type of stuff we listen to and what we want to make really impacted our ability to choose from the songs we write and be like, okay, this is what's going to work for this band. This is what's going to make it cohesive.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like something that I really enjoyed about Get Some Sleep is kind of just like the scope of it, which probably makes sense coming with from the, you know, collaborative effort that you're talking about. Like I get vibes of like, you know, Midwest emo Riot Girl, even as far apart as like a band like Slint all the way to like some 90s pop rock vocals. What were some of those, like those touch tones for the EP and then also for like the LP now that you're kind of like making a more concise sound?
It was kind of all over the place. Yeah. And I mean, it's not to say that we're not proud of the EP because we definitely are, but we're definitely honing it in more. I think most specifically for the LP, it's been like, we're moving more in the direction of like early 2000s, like Deep Elm Records type bands and like mid to late 90s post-hardcore, like No Knife and Jawbox and stuff like that is sort of like really where we're like aiming now.
Got some shoegaze in there. We sprinkled it on the side.
Yeah, because I don't know, we have Adam, our other guitarist who's not here with us right now, has a lot of guitar pedals and we might as well put them to use.
Also just Estelle's infatuation with it.
Yeah, that too.
Big thing, yeah.
I think just the eclectic mix of music that we're all into just lends a lot of different sonic qualities to the music that we're putting out because we're just all into such different stuff.
Like if you listen to all the bands that we were in before this one, it's like wildly different.
I was in a band that Tom later described perfectly as basically Breaking Benjamin. I didn't even know it at the time, but turns out I was in a Breaking Benjamin not cover band, and I'm almost ashamed of that, but he's made me see a different light of it.
Now, Breaking Benjamin is sick. The song that you showed me from your old band sounded almost exactly like I Will Not Bow. So
I didn't even know it at the time. I was just playing bass, just trying to see how many riffs I could throw into a song before the band yelled at me.
Yeah, so you came from like a more of a metal background, and like Estelle came from like very punk music. I came from more like pop punk emo. Like my old band was like free throw type emo.
Yeah, and I was playing like indie punk stuff, I guess. Is that how you would describe it? I don't know.
It was like indie pop sort of.
Indie pop, yeah.
You had a very Connecticut sound.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I yelled a lot, but it was definitely not like punk. But I was making bedroom pop for a little bit, and then it evolved into like indie pop.
And our other guitarist, Adam, like played in that band with Nina for a bit.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's how Adam got.
That's how he ended up in the mix here with us.
I almost said indoctrinated, but that is not the right word.
He's also like jazz trained too, so it really like none of us should work.
I mean,
together.
I am too.
That's true.
But Adam plays like prog. Like he loves like Chon and like shreddy bands like that.
Yeah, I'm not there. I just did walking bass lines all through high school.
Oh well, that by that standard, then I'm jazz trained. So how about that? We're all world class musicians.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not jazz trained. Most of the bands that I've played drums in the past were like super heavy. Like our LP has like a 20-second power violence part on it that we've been playing live, and everyone's been really stoked on. Cause like I'd say it for the past, like since I stopped doing my old band Carlos Danger for the past couple of years, I've like mostly been into very heavy music. Like I listen to a lot of like metalcore and death metal and stuff. So
yeah, that kind of brings to mind Bedsheets and Plastic Stars, which I love that it's marked as a hidden track, even though like things are kind of so digital these days.
Yeah,
because it feels like that. It feels like this kind of place where you can like let loose, no holds barred, not kind of like worry about what people are gonna like think of it, like and attached to the release itself. Can you talk a little bit about that track?
Yeah.
Zelikan, because the other two of us weren't involved with it at all.
No, that was purely me and Estelle when Estelle was in their old place in this like weird sunroom kind of echo chamber of just like, there was like a futon and then it was all windows. I felt like a plant in an observatory. But anyways, the reason why it's called a hidden track instead of a normal, basic normal track is because it doesn't purposely sound like anything else on the album. And also Estelle is very much into the old cassette and CD days where bands would have like 45,000 minutes of silence and then like a little nothing song at the end of it. Just like, I like that stuff too. But that song was weird. I just wrote a riff. Same way we wrote the first song. I just had a riff. I was like, this sounds like something Deftones would play if they didn't know how to write music. And then Estelle was like, no, it's perfect. I'm gonna write a poem to go along with that. And we wrote it in like a day. And I'm just like, where should it go with this? She's like, no, that's it. I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, just keep playing that. I'm gonna throw effects on it. I'm like, all right, I've never made music like that before. And then it just evolved into that. And it's maybe my favorite song on the EP. I don't know. I keep going back and forth between loving and hating it.
I just remember when you guys were recording that, I walked into the room and while you were like just making noise, my friend Casey was on the floor just like playing with all the pedals to make it sound as ugly as possible. And but with purpose, if you listen to our CD or our cassette, it is actually a hidden track after like a bit of silence on there. So
I guess that's not very playlist friendly.
no, not really.
We don't care. We're not trying
to don't put 12 a.m. on any of your playlists, I guess.
No, it's they're separate on like Spotify.
So. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of 12 a.m., I think that's probably my favorite track on the EP. I feel like it's like kind of this like catharsis. And I love the way like the music like builds to match the lyrics. Can you talk a little about that one?
That's probably my favorite too. And I actually think that's most people's favorite song on it. And not because of that, but just because it came out so good. I think that song defines like a lot of the direction that we're going into moving forward. I think that song was really where we figured like, oh, this is what we do the best. This is what we want to sound like. I don't know, that song came together very naturally. Like it was sort of the product of like jamming, but also the more we played it, the more cohesive it became. And it was the last one that we wrote for the EP. So I think it was like around that time that we were really coming into our own with like knowing what we wanted to do.
Yeah, and how did you kind of like take that energy into, you know, the beginnings of the writing process for the LP?
We didn't, because we were in quarantine for the writing process of the LP. And so there were a couple songs here and there that Tom has a song that he completely wrote on the LP. And I have a couple songs that I gave them like kind of like some riffage, if you will, and just like sent it over to Estelle and Zila and we're like, what can you guys do with this? So there's a couple of songs that I kind of like, quote unquote, wrote. But most of it was honestly Zila and Estelle just sitting in Zila's apartment and writing music for the quarantine. So I'm going to hand the baton over.
This is the apartment I live in. For those who can't see what's happening, it's basically hell. There's fire all the way around and there's a lot of brimstone underneath. You got to wear shoes whenever you're over here. And yeah, no, basically we recorded most of it, or not recorded. We didn't record any of it. We recorded a acoustic EP. We have one that's out now. We were gonna release one during quarantine and it didn't go well together because it sucked. That's all we have to say.
It was a lot of trial and error to figure out. It was almost like good in a way that we had a year off from playing shows so we could really figure out like what we wanted to do exactly.
Honestly, trying to record all of the EP that we have it now in an acoustic format and then getting burnt out in that recording process is when we wrote 6 or 7 out of the songs that are on the LP, which is like being exhausted from trying to do an acoustic EP with the worst technology available.
And the songs on our LP are like by far the best thing that we've come up with so far.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't mean to toot my own horn or also like to degrade what we did for the EP, because I like the EP a lot, but honestly the LP, like the EP does not hold a candle to the LP. Like the LP is gonna blow everyone's minds, rock their socks off, and you will be naked by the end of listening to it. No, but it's I think it's very much, after listening to the EP, it's like, okay, after like 12 a.m., you're like, okay, I see what direction this is going. And then you're going to listen to the LP and you're going to be like, okay, like, this is it.
I want this band on my tour.
Yeah. I want this band on my record label. Hint, yeah. Hint, wink, wink, nudge.
No, we're gonna pull a Wolfpack and we're gonna sell out Madison Square Garden unsigned. Just you wait.
Yeah, I love when you can like see bands that really do, like you said, like kind of make that progress where it's like, okay, here was like this release, and now I can tell where they're going with the next one, and I can't fucking wait to like hear what that is.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be like, it's gonna be pretty obvious. I don't know, the way, I honestly can't believe that we've done as much as we have, the way that this band came together, because it was so like on a whim. And at the time, like, I was in another band that was signed and like we all thought was going to be the big thing, but I was like super unhappy being in that band and like didn't really like doing it at all. So I ended up just devoting more of my effort to this. And I think it's really paid off.
Well, this is one of those bands that we're not going to see anything for quite a while. And then like overnight, 2 or 3 years from now, we're just going to mark my whoop.
I mean, I can only hope so.
Yeah.
I don't want us to sound like we're like, yeah, we're going to be the biggest rock stars in the world.
No. Manifest.
Because, I mean, if I'm being honest, the type of music we make doesn't really lend itself to like being huge. It's a pretty niche.
That's a reasonable goal.
we're gonna work with Drake.
I don't think. Yeah, we'll never be at like Madison Square Garden, but I think we could probably like be an opener at Stone Pony. I don't know. It's like 85 degrees in this apartment.
Seems like you've kind of really hit the ground running and embraced the fact that, you know, things are open again and you're able to do that. Like, can you talk a little about kind of like the mentality behind that and also what kind of the live show is like?
I mean, it's basically like we played a couple shows before everything shut down back under our old name.
Like three, right?
Yeah, we played like three or four. And it was extremely different. Like, we sounded like a local band, really, before. We sounded like, I don't know, not necessarily that put together. Some people who were doing it ourselves.
We sounded like a local band. Now we sound like a foreign
band.
One of the
shows we did, as I pulled the power cable out of my amp, I shattered a tube. And, like, my amp was just completely broken before we played. So we had to borrow one from the venue. And I think that was the worst sounding show we've ever played.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But I think, like, after that happening, over the course of, like, having all this time, you know, not playing shows, we were kind of like, okay, if we want to take this band seriously and actually do like things, we need to stand out somehow. We need to actually sound good. So that's why, you know, we added Adam. We basically got all new gear over the course of that period. And we just made it so that we could, like, if we got asked to, you know, open for a large, you know, band or go on a large tour, we could just do it. Without having to, you know, wait. We also decided that we should not talk in between songs at all. We have like looper pedals and ambient noise and stuff going on in between songs, because it was like way too awkward when we were trying to like talk in between and make jokes. It was just it was falling flat on its face every time.
Yeah, I think the professionality really increased because of that. I think that was the best change that we made. We could have not practiced at once between then and now, and if we just didn't banter, we would be 10 times better.
But yeah, as far as like, I don't know, everybody has consistently always said, like, it doesn't matter what you do to get out there to do it. You've got to be touring all the time. You got to be, you know, playing as much as possible. And like, admittedly, everybody in Connecticut is like aware of who most of us are as people, especially like me and Nina, because we've been around for so long playing in different bands.
Yeah, I'm older shit.
So we don't really want to play in Connecticut that much. I think we're doing like once a month max to try and just like spread things out. But we're literally just trying to play everywhere that we can, because we're trying to, you know, we really care about this band. We're trying to do big things. So we have two acoustic shows coming up this week, because we just put out our acoustic EP, Past Midnight.
And we're going to be in Connecticut on Thursday and in Boston on Friday. We're playing all of the acoustic songs on that and doing some stripped down versions of stuff from the EP and LP. We're doing a Midwest tour in December that is going to get announced pretty soon. We just booked the whole thing. And we're doing a run with the band Sinking from Mass, who are on Patient Zero Records, more like 90s emo revival, in November. We're really just trying to get out there. And this is the way to do it. And now that we have, you know, the ability to do it, we're not going to take it for granted. We're just going to give it our all and get out there.
Sure. Yeah. And you mentioned like the kind of attempt at an acoustic EP kind of being torn down and then turning into Past Midnight. Can you talk a little about kind of like that, you know, what kind of made the pieces finally fit together?
Oh, not using me as engineer was really what sent that over the edge. The second we tried to stop doing it in this room that everyone is looking at right now and did it in an actual studio with professional gear, with like put together equipment and not just me and Estelle, it went way smoother. It's actually, up until the LP, it was the smoothest recording experience I've ever had in a studio ever. And the LP came along, I was like, oh wow, holy shit, yeah, we're just moving now. Sorry, can I swear? I apologize.
Yeah, yeah, you're fine.
Oh, frick yeah. Suck you, mom, dad.
Yeah,
see, this is why we weren't good at banter.
For those who miss bantering, this is what it was. I had theater and improv training and it just did not lend way to this band's sound at all, and I kept trying to force it.
But like, as far as this acoustic EP goes, I think like having the whole band involved also just made it easier. It like having, you know, each other to rely on to, you know, sort of expand the sound, I guess, you know, having multiple layers. It wasn't, because I gotta say, Zila, you and Estelle are like the two most, you're the two pickiest people that I've ever met when it comes to your own performances. Yeah. Like, so a recording that is just the two of you, you would both be sitting there picking apart every single piece of it and it would just never come out, because you'd just be like, no, I don't like how that sounds.
That's honestly what happened. There was like four takes that Estelle did, and off of a tiny JBL speaker, we went through each line, sometimes each word, going through each of the we comped like live, and I comped with Estelle, which I now learned you should never comp with the artist there, because it takes for, yeah, each song took like 6 or 7 hours, and then we didn't even release it. So.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, when we did get some sleep, when we were doing mix revisions with Ryan Pellegano, who engineered that for us, like I was sitting there, Zila and Estelle were just going through every single tiny little thing. They were like, nope, 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 like every 5 seconds into the song. And I had to like leave because it was making me so anxious.
Me and Tom are looking at each other like, oh God, like this is going to be our future, huh?
But,
like,
but
gross over exaggeration, but yeah.
But I will say it came out sounding really good and really professional. It sounds like everybody who has messaged me has been like, wow, it sounds insanely good for like a DIY recording. So I'll say it paid off, but like, yeah, I'm not saying it as an insulting thing either. That's just, you know, it's a mark of being a good musician, but that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, it's just how we operate at this point.
And now that you're like wrapping up the recording of the LP soon, how's that past process gonna affect the mixing and mastering stages of that?
I don't know, and I'm scared to find out.
No, mixing, I mean, it's going to be helpful that we're probably not going to have a chance to be in the room with Chris Teddy at like any point while he's doing it. So, I mean, he has done huge, huge records. Like, it's not that we didn't trust Ryan when he was doing that either. It was just that we had the opportunity to be there in the room with him while he was doing it that made it happen that way. But yeah, I don't know. I think Chris is just going to do his thing. And then for mastering, it's going to be, you know, somebody that we don't even know doing it. So it's just going to be, also, I don't know that any of us are particularly picky about mastering or even like really know enough about it. Like maybe Zila does, but I certainly don't know enough about it to be picky with the master.
I still barely know what mastering is.
Now, the reason that we did overly critical was because we're going to leave names off the table, obviously, for professional reasons, but We recorded most of this bedroom and someone's bedroom before the pandemic, and getting them back was an arduous process that took over a year to finally get the tracks to the studio, where we ended up finally finishing it. And then at the point when the tracks are finally delivered over, everything was so not as we said it, and everything sounded dismal and horrible. And instead of re-recording everything, we just tried to keep pushing on and going forward with what we had. And
yeah, almost everything still ended up getting re-recorded.
Yeah. And even then, like, more. But yeah, we should have just start scrapped from the bottom up. But the freeze, but because we did it like a year ago and it was like such in development hell for a while, we tried to just keep pushing forward. And that I think is why Estelle and I got overly critical towards the end of the mixing process. But no, yeah, it's Silver Bullet. Like, everything was at the same point as that with the person who's been in the field for forever. Everything's in one place. Files aren't getting transferred around. We're not bouncing back and forth from engineers trying to figure out who can actually do it for us.
For sure. Awesome. And then I always like to wrap up the same way, which is just by asking for, you know, a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about, whether it's music or life or whatever else is kind of on your mind that you want to share.
I'm the last person who should be giving anyone any kind of advice. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to leave this up to the other two. Nobody wants advice from me.
Don't work too hard for someone who doesn't queue. Work very hard.
Zila, you're the least qualified person to say that.
No, exactly. That's why I'm saying it.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'm trying to manifest it.
All right. My advice, take your own advice. Because I think that...
That's such a cop-out.
No.
You shit on my advice and then the best advice is no advice.
No. I'm saying, like, because especially today, something happened where someone like called me out and something I was doing completely wrong. And at first I got like really defensive about it. And I was like, no, I'm doing it right, actually. And then I came back and I was like, no, I'm doing it wrong. And if I looked at anybody else doing this, I would definitely say I'm doing it wrong. And I'm just saying that I'm doing it right because I want to be in the right. So what I'm trying to say here is take your own advice and look at yourself and your actions as if you were another person and say to yourself, okay, what would I change here? What would I tell this person? And like, what would I do? Would I be softer with them? Would that I be less harsh with them? Or would I be like, get your shit in gear? Think of yourself as like someone else you would be telling something to, if that makes sense.
I changed my mind. Actually, I do have advice. You want to know what my advice is?
Oh yeah.
Don't ask Nina for advice.
No, my advice my advice is to listen to our EP Past Midnight, available everywhere now. And also to come see us sometime in the next 4 months, because we're going to be everywhere throughout the Northeast.
Also, I learned this at work and I'm kind of annoyed. You can't listen to us on Pandora. And I know nobody uses Pandora, but I'm still kind of upset about that.
Yeah, whoever's mom is trying to listen to us on Pandora is...
We're missing our entire demographic.
That'll mess with our algorithm for sure.
Trapped is going to hold this over our heads for the rest of our lives.
Trapped?
Trapped love bragging about how well they do on Pandora.
Yeah, yeah, another conversation has been successfully completed. I'm really looking forward to what's to come for Arms Like Roses and to hear the direction they're taking for their debut album. Be sure to check out their two EPs and catch a show if you can. Check back tomorrow for another very exciting episode with a hot new band that I think you'll love as well. Fly on the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for all your support.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.